episode 521 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Justice League Spotlight episode. Today, I'm going to be talking about Justice League number 8 from writer James Tynan. Art by Mikkel Janin. Colors are by Jeremy Cox. And letters are by Tom Napolitano. This is actually one of the Legion of Doom issues. Scott Snyder, who's the normal writer on Justice League, has said every 5 issues or so, 3 to 5 issues, I guess you'd say, we're going to get one of these Legion of Doom focused books where we really get to see things from the villain's perspective. So I think issue 5 was a Legion of Doom, and now again, issue 8 is a Legion of Doom issue, and I think the next one's 13. So right there on the cover, we get the Batman who laughs joins the Legion of Doom, and the Legion of Doom is kind of written over the logo there of the Justice League. There's a really great Legion of Doom cover from Mikkel Janin showing Black Manta and Cheetah attacking Wonder Woman and Aquaman with the Batman who laughs looking on, and there's also a close-up of the Joker from Jim Lee. And when I say close-up, I mean we don't even see his whole face. His eyes are kind of framed, and of course that smile. So onto the issue itself, the year is 1988. We're looking at a satellite that's high above the United States. The satellite's called Stellaron 5, and it's hanging in geosynchronous orbit, and it's drinking in radiation from deep space, and it's waiting. And what it's actually waiting for is that totality. Right, so 2 decades before the totality actually crashes to Earth, and this goes back to what we saw in issue 1 of Justice League when we saw the totality heading toward Earth. John Jones and the rest of the Justice League sensed it. They had that meeting in that kind of mental boardroom and ultimately decided not to try to stop the totality. But we did see at that point that the totality did exist briefly in all times across all multiverses. So I'm not sure how they know the exact moment in 1988 where it's going to show up. Again, it's supposed to exist at all times. It's kind of hard to wrap your mind around that. But they know that it's coming soon, and the satellite has been built to capture the energy from it, or at least as much as they can. And it's interesting, if you look at the scientist in the satellite, on the very first page, second panel, there's one gentleman there, has an overcoat on, and he's holding some documents or some kind of files in his hand, and there's a symbol on the documents, and it very much looks like the Legion of Doom base, or the symbol that's on the doorknob that Luther has. And the file says the Legionnaires Club. So obviously there's a lot more to that Legionnaires building and group that was in Smallville. And obviously it'll come back around again. So we see the totality does show up, and it basically overloads the satellite. Even though the satellite attempts to absorb as much as it can, Tynan, this is the way Tynan puts it. He says it's as if a calculator tried to contain the information of a supercomputer. So a lot of the energy, as the systems backfire, the energy is basically just transferred through the satellite. And there's a beam that's fired out toward Earth, and it hits a man in wilderness, and that man is Will Patton. And I love this. I love the fact that Tynan is bringing it back to old pre-Flashpoint, pre-New 52 DC Universe. This is Starman. This is the Starman that was created by Roger Stern in I think it was 88, I think the series came out. And eventually he got tied into the other James Robinson Starman or whatever. But for a while he was there. He was on his own. He had his own series. It didn't last a really long time, but his origin was very similar to this. He was struck by a beam of energy from a satellite, and he gained this power. So bringing Starman back, the Will Patton version of Starman, and keeping his origin nearly the same, but just tweaking it a little bit to make it fit into this story. So as the satellites race to glean any information they can from this event that just happened, Will Patton wakes up in the Rockies. He's got this energy coursing through his body. He doesn't really understand it. He calls himself Starman, and he's going to use that power to become a hero, take to the sky. And then all of a sudden, he's blasted from behind. And as he falls from the sky, he's preparing himself for battle. But he realizes there's something wrong. This feels strange. It feels different. It doesn't feel as it should be. And when he looks up in the sky, he sees a man step out of a hole from the future, holding an impossible weapon and walking on the air. And that man is Lex Luthor. And it's not the energy or the weapon that frightens Will Patton. It's the look in his eyes, the hunger for knowledge. And Luthor says, "Mr. Patton, I presume. My name is Lex Luthor, and I have a few questions for you about the end of the universe." So clearly, Luthor discovered this event that was about to happen, probably from some information at the Legionnaires Club, and he has stepped back through time to find out what Will Patton knows. I mean, he was struck with energy that is in itself the totality. He's Will Patton, that is, probably has more knowledge of locked away inside his brain and inside his body because of the powers. He has more knowledge of the totality than possibly anyone. And we know that Luthor wants those questions. So we turn the page to see an amazing double page spread. And we've got all the Justice League here. And it appears that Will Patton is strapped down into some kind of machine. And the Justice League are seeing these memories and events play out through his mind. And John Jones is giving the briefing, saying this is the point at which Starman's memories end. And as you can see through these few flashes that he still retains of memory, they're disconnected, but it looks like he was tortured and experimented on, and it doesn't show how he managed to escape. But from what we can tell, the energy that fuels his body is connected to totality, and Luthor was able to extract knowledge from him, and it seems clear that Vandal Savage knew something as well, because the base in Will Patton's mind is that Legion of Doom Hall that they recognize as Vandal Savage's base, at least Hawkgirl does. And John Jones goes on to say, whatever Luthor uncovered, he knows more than we do, right? Because Luthor was willing to break time and space to find the answers, and we have the totality, but make no mistake, Luthor's winning. He took the knowledge from Patton's mind, and there's no telling how far he's going to be willing to go to learn what he needs to do next. So meanwhile, in that Hall of Doom, the threesome of the Joker and Grodd and Sinestro are observing Luthor as he heads down into the basement of the Hall of Doom, and they're pretty nervous. Joker's a little jittery. Gorilla Grodd has literally reached out to the turtle child in the nursery, cradling it in his mind just in case he needs to access the still force. Sinestro likewise has charged himself up with ultraviolet light just in case. So clearly we know Luthor is about to confront something dangerous. And Luthor heads through a secret door, which is the first lock, and then through the second defense, which is the geothermal surroundings of the fortress itself, and then through a mystical portal that has a powerful containment spell written by the dark sorceress Morgan Le Fay, which supposedly once held Merlin in a cave for over 1,000 years, and finally through a fourth gate that's made of future technology that Luthor himself built. And as Luthor's making the journey through these safeguards, we can tell the Joker's not happy. He's like, Luthor shouldn't have brought him here, particularly that him. And Sinestro's reminding him that this is a different creature. He's from the darkest underbelly of the multiverse. It's not the same as your rival. And we see Joker say, a Batman is a Batman, and you don't put a Batman in a cage without him wanting to be there. And so we see Luthor walk into the cell, and he addresses the person that's there chained up, saying, you were right, I need your help. And I love the fact that Luthor's wearing a purple suit, or a bluish purple suit, with a green, like a almost an aquamarine shirt, and a brighter, like pinkish tie. So it's very much the color scheme of his power suit, right? The classic Luthor power suit. And we see from behind that the Batman Who Laughs is chained up with a lot of chains, looking almost in a crucifixion pose. And as Luther enters, he starts laughing and says, "I thought you'd never ask." And this begins the conversation, the chess match between these two arch villains. And the Joker, or the Batman Who Laughs rather, is saying, you know, I was thinking of the conversation we had not so long ago when you, and this is a reference to Dark Knight's metal. So when you're trying to be a hero and you came to me in the cave and you asked if there was something you could do to make the other heroes trust you, like you had for some reason decided that this is what you were going to do. You were going to be a hero. And at that time, I warned you about the chip on your shoulder and the fact that you needed to spit in God's eyes to prove you're not small, which is a very Luther thing to do, right? Like, prove your importance. And I told you at that time that you had to fight it. If you wanted to be a hero, you needed to humble yourself before what the League represented. But I knew that you wouldn't, because that's not who you are. And Luther's like, you know, I didn't come here to play mind games, Batman. I need answers. And the Batman Who Laughs says, you have me all wrong. You know, I used to see that chip on your shoulder as a weakness, but now I know it's your strength, that you've used it to get close to the answers you need. And you really have no idea how rare it is to see you in action, because I've traveled everywhere, both sides of the multiverse, you know, and where we are now is the heroes have broken the source wall and the tools of creation are spilled out on the table and they're there for the taking for somebody who's willing to pick them up. And Luther, again, he calls Batman on it. He's like, you're saying a lot of words, but you're not telling me anything. Don't forget who locked you in the cage. And this is great. And goes right to what the Joker himself had just said, right? He's like, I'm happy to talk, Lex, and give you the answers you need, but you have to remember something. And he opens his mouth, sticks out his tongue, and he's got a lockpick right there on his tongue. And he spits it out at Luther, and he says, you know, I'm a Batman, and this pick is made of dark metal, and I could have been out of this cage in a second. Through all your locks in no time flat. But I chose to be here. And, you know, you found the trail leading to the Legionnaires Club, and you found the papers that led you to the satellite experiment, and by the chronal energy I can smell on you, you went and captured Starman and looked for the answers that you needed. And that allowed you to recruit the Legion that you did recruit, and recruit people that were in a position to help you to take control of those powers that you'll need. And you probably already have the Invisible Spectrum and the Steel Force, because those are the two easiest. And Luther's pretty impressed by this. He's like, yep, still the world's greatest detective, right? Yeah, the acquisitions of the next energies are already underway. And the Batman Who Laughs goes on to say, yeah, but you want to know what you're unlocking, right? Like, you're collecting all these keys. You're collecting these seven new forces. You're gaining control of them, and those are the keys. But you want to know what you're unlocking, right? You've jumped to the conclusion, but you're worried that you're wrong. You're just not sure. You're scared. And Luther says, I don't get scared. And the Batman Who Laughs is like, yeah, but you thought you had the answers. You thought you knew. It was doom, and it was destiny, and you set everything up, and you were there, and you were reaching out for the totality, but then you lost, right? You lost to Hawkgirl and the League, and you don't understand how that could happen. You know, that mighty brain of yours, that ego, you don't understand why. And he offers to tell him. He says, I'll tell you, Luther, but there's a cost, and he starts laughing. And I love it. The Joker's like, I hate that sound. It's his own laugh. And meanwhile, Grodd's wondering what Luther is getting them all into. As we turn the page, we see the scene shifts in Newfoundland, Canada. And Cheetah and Black Manta are there on a mission. And Cheetah's wondering if Black Manta trusts Luther. And he basically says that trust is foolish. And Luther has promised him every Atlantean dead by his hand, and power over the lives of what he wants. And if Luther can give Black Manta that, then he's there, because that's what he wants with every fiber of his being. And the first stage is in motion. The call has been sent out. The forces of darkness are beginning to rise. And if what Luther brings gives Black Manta the opportunity to gain the power he wants, then great. He'll happily be satisfied. But if it doesn't come to pass, he'll seek another way without Luther alone, which is how we're more traditionally used to seeing Black Manta. So meanwhile, the two continue on their mission and they attack a lighthouse keeper who seems very surprised that Cheetah is able to physically injure him. And as he is sliced by Cheetah and appears to be in a lot of pain, she tells him, "That's right. You're wondering why your old tricks aren't working, why your wound isn't healing, but my claws have been laced with the tear of extinction. And so no more tricks and no more illusions. You've hidden in this world long enough, but your old sins are bearing fruit. And you can probably feel the graveyard of the gods calling your name. So listen closely, because it's the crash of the waves. And we're going to send you in and release what you've kept trapped there for millions of years." And then when we turn the page, we see her say, "O mighty Poseidon, Lord of the Sea." So this is Poseidon. This is the god Poseidon who has been hiding in plain sight. And as he lays there dying, he whispers, "You fools will drown the earth." And Cheetah says, "To get what we want? Yeah, of course we will." And as they set the lighthouse ablaze and walk away, Cheetah's very self-satisfied. She talks about how she's dreamt of killing one of them for years, one of her pantheon. Obviously, she's referring to a god that is related to Wonder Woman. And she goes on to say that thanks to Luther and the tears of extinction, she's able to kill any god, and she's ready to put her claws to work and see how the little princess of Themyscira handles that, as she says. So we see Poseidon still in his human form, the flames licking up around him as he reaches for a ship in a bottle, perhaps some kind of a signal to send out a warning. And the scene shifts back to Luther and the Batman Who Laughs in the basement. And the Batman Who Laughs is saying, "You know, after our conversation in the cave, you did recruit your team, and you were..." He says, "After our conversation in the cave, you did win over the others, the Justice League. You know, you were so determined to prove yourself. The other league started to trust you. The other heroes started to trust you, even Superman. But I never did. I knew you'd never change. You were never going to humble yourself, not to something that you didn't believe in. You really don't believe in justice and equality, right?" And Luther says, How is this remotely relevant?" And the Batman Who Laughs says, "Because my advice hasn't changed. You've got to surrender to something bigger than yourself, but it has to be something you believe in. You don't believe in being a hero. You don't believe in justice for all. You've never been able to stand for that. You're never going to martyr yourself for a cause. It's all about you. You see yourself as the center." And he does comment that that's why Superman's always been able to beat you, which is neither here nor there. But the fact of the matter is that Luther heard the totality calling. And because Luther heard it, and because he was able to collect the clues, he believed that it was meant for him. He was destined to win, and he still doesn't understand how he failed. So Luther says that, "I've seen the future. It was calling. The totality was calling me. The underpinnings of the universe scream out for doom, and I'm giving it to them. So if you're just going to tell me what I already know, I'll see myself out." And the Batman says, "You know what? You're standing on the edge, and you could be the best version of yourself. It's what you've always wanted. But the universe isn't destined for you. That's where you're making the mistake. You think you're owed something, but you're not. But that doesn't mean you can't still take it. You can't still take what you want." And Luther says, "I've had enough," and starts to walk off, right? The Batman Who Laughs is just talking in riddles. And as he starts to walk off, the Batman Who Laughs says, "It's a pity. I was about to tell you her name." And that gets Luther's attention. He says, "Her name?" And the Batman Who Laughs is now ready to put all his cards on the table, or at least as much as he will in this deal. He says, "Yeah, the deal is I'm going to have my own plots and my own machinations, They may not be in tandem with yours. You may not agree with what I'm doing, but I agree. I won't stand in your way, and you won't stand in my way. And Luther says, why should I trust you? And the Batman, and the trust is a big issue in this series, right? We saw it, or in this issue especially, we saw it with Cheetah asking Black Manta and him saying, trust is foolish, and now it's showing up here a second time. And the Batman who laughs kind of, it seems like he agrees with Black Manta. He says, trust in others is an idiot's game, Lex. You don't need to trust me, but you need to trust yourself, right? Trust in what you believe. You've believed all this time that you were destined for this greatness, and you're not, but doesn't mean you can't take it. But you need to trust in your ability to solve this mystery, to find the answers, to succeed in what you set your mind out to do, control these seven different energy sources, these seven different forces, and use them as keys to unlock what you need to unlock, right? Trust that you'll win, even though you might lose. And that's enough for Lex. He says, deal, tell me what you know. And so the Batman who laughs says, well, you know about the dark forces of creation that were locked away, but the question is, who are they locked away from? And you know the source wall was a prison, but who was on the other side? Who was it built to keep out? And then he reveals the name and says, her name is Perpetua. And if you look closely, her name is written in every corner of the universe, and her history whispered in secret for all of time. You unlock the powers that she once wielded, and you will unlock her. And Luther wants more detail. He says, who is she? Who is Perpetua? But the Batman who laughs is, he's given up enough knowledge. He says, you're a smart guy, Lex, you figure it out. And what's more pressing isn't who she is, it's where she is. And as he says that, the scene shifts to the Hall of Justice, and we see Batman, who's still immobilized in a chair that looks somewhat similar to the Mobius chair. Remember, he had just about every bone in his body broken when he was shrunken down inside Superman. So he's still recovering from that. And him and John Jones are in a little containment room that has a box that holds the totality. And John Jones is voicing his fears that every day they're falling further behind Luther. Luther knows about the totality, and John Jones is hoping that when he goes to Thanagar Prime, he'll be able to find answers about the totality and answers to what they need to know before it's too late. And Batman says, you know, this is bigger than all of us, John, and we need to stay humble while we find the answers we need, and we need to trust our instincts. They haven't failed us yet. And John says, well, you know, I know you're right, but there is a part of the totality that's alive and it wants something. You know, it gave Hawkgirl the ability to beat Luther, but I don't think that means it's on our side. And it's not necessarily on Luther's side either. It's on its own side. And Batman says, he's not buying it. He's like, you're personifying something that's cosmic, John, but I do take your point, and I'll do what I can while you're gone to try to get more information out of Starman. But as far as we know, the totality is a mystery, and it's a mystery that's in our hands. So no matter what Luther knows, we do have that advantage. We just have to trust ourselves that we can solve it first. And then in the last panel, we see the totality shift from a blue glow to a yellow glow, and we see the outline of what looks like a female inside. So I think the obvious implication there is that inside that totality, what is the power of the totality, the power source inside of it? It's Perpetua herself, and she's trapped, she's imprisoned there, and obviously she wants out. So again, though, we get that word trust. Batman's last line, we just have to trust ourselves that we can solve it first. So again, trust is a big theme here, right? Trust what they know. We've already seen the League last issue, as a matter of fact. Well, 6 and 7. And when John connected the whole human race and then allowed everybody to kind of be on the same page and shared not only their strengths, but also their weaknesses. Everybody kind of opened up on an emotional and an empathetic level, and it allowed the League to basically hold off the Umbrax, the dark galaxy, the dark planet that was going to take over Earth, because at that point, everybody was trusting everybody. you know, the league trusts implicitly, but there was also trust among humankind. So I'm finding it interesting that I don't recall Scott Snyder or James Tynan or Joshua Williamson or any of those guys talking about trust as a theme. And it seems like they're, as the story has gone on, they're leaning more and more into that. So I'll have to chat with them at New York Comic Con and see what more information I can get and share with you guys about that. As far as this issue goes, we got a lot of answers. We didn't necessarily, we don't have the whole picture yet. You know, we don't know what all the other forces are. We know about the Stilled Force. We know about the Sage Force. We know about the ultraviolet spectrum. So that still leaves four to go. And obviously we don't know that much about Perpetua. So there are still a lot of questions to be solved and answered. But we have gotten a big chunk here. This issue didn't have a lot of action. I do like that it had the little interlude right in the middle with Cheetah and Black Manta. I think they work really well as a team. Black Manta is so kind of calm. His rage is a very, I don't want to say a calm rage, but it's a very focused rage. So he's very calculating, right? He'll leave destruction and death in his wake, but he doesn't flail about wildly. He's not a brawler, right? And that contrasts with Cheetah. You know, when she goes into a situation, she is, you know, very graceful about it, but she's much more physical, much more hands-on. You know, she likes to get up close and personal and kill people with her claws, as opposed to Manta, who's, you know, throwing his harpoon or using his eye blasts from his helmet to wreak havoc. So I love, they're very different in kind of the way they physically attack and fight. And so I like that contrast. And it also kind of goes hand in hand with their personalities as well. You know, Cheetah's a little more wild. And again, like I said, Black Manta's much more focused. He's got that just intense hatred for Aquaman and the Atlanteans, and that's what drives him. And he doesn't stray. It's almost like he has a one-track mind. So that's the action for the issue, and I did enjoy it. I think it was necessary, because other than that, this issue is a lot of dialogue. It's a lot of text and talking. It's not to say that it's not interesting, but it did need those few pages of action just to kind of boost the story up a little bit and not make it a, you know, people invariably, when there's not enough action in a superhero book, will complain and say, oh, that issue was boring. But we should also mention that, or I should also mention that it's a credit to Mikel Yanin, the artist on this title, that he can do a book like this where, you know, two thirds of it is basically people talking and keep it interesting visually. You know, he's an unbelievable artist. He is so, so good. And I have no complaints about the art in this. Jeremy Cox's colors, they're very bright and vibrant, which suits a Justice League book. You know, makes it feel very superheroic, very classic in feel. So from the storytelling, which I don't know that anybody does transitions from panel to panel or shows movement better than Mikel Yanin, especially when he does the kind of the double exposure shots or triple exposure where he shows people moving through space with kind of shadow selves in panels. And if you've seen his art, you know exactly what I mean. We don't really get that here, but that's not to say that his action scenes aren't amazing. I love his panel layouts. I love the way he lays the panels out on the page. I love his sense of design and style and backgrounds. I mean, his art is just incredible, absolutely incredible. And again, the colors by Jeremy Cox in the battle with some reds from the blast from Black Manta. The reds are really intense, and we see them again, reds and oranges, when the lighthouse is on fire. It's very well done. The basement scenes with, I already mentioned the color scheme on Lex's suit that are amazing, and just the whole overall greenish hue of this basement where they're holding the Batman Who Laughs prison. I mean, it's just superbly done. And the dialogue by James Tynan for the Batman Who Laughs feels spot on. I'm still not a big fan of the character visually. I just don't care for it. It's just not my style. And I've been kind of indifferent about the character so far, but this is the first time where he's been written that I've started to feel like I'm getting an understanding of who the Batman Who Laughs is. And it's starting to become more real to me that he is Bruce Wayne, that he is a Batman, kind of infected with the madness of the Joker. It has never come across so accurately to me, or realistically to me, than it does in this issue. So kudos to Tynan for getting that voice down of the Batman Who Laughs so perfectly. So again, I think all the creative team here firing on all cylinders. From the Mikael Yunien's art, it's probably my favorite thing about the issue is the art, the colors by Jeremy Cox, the pacing from Tynan, and the great dialogue. And I'll give a shout out to Scott Snyder as well, because I know overall this is his story. You know, he's the showrunner, if you will, for the Justice League corner of the DC universe right now. And they're all working together, you know, James Tynan, Scott Snyder, and Joshua Williamson. So kudos to all three. But this issue was amazing. I was pretty excited when I heard that we were periodically going to get these Legion of Doom issues, because, you know, I grew up with the Challenge of the Super Friends cartoons, and the Legion of Doom always holds a special place in my heart. And it's very appropriate that it is Lex Luthor leading the Legion of Doom. So it'll be interesting to see the dynamics going forward now that the Batman Who Laughs has quote unquote joined the League. I mean, I don't know if he's really joined. He comes right out and says to Luthor, you know, I'm going to give you this knowledge, but remember that I have my own plans, and I'm not going to stand in your way, and you don't stand in my way, and we'll see where it goes from there. So is he going to just go off on his own and run his own scheme, or is he going to stay close to this group and see how things play out? That's yet to be determined. So again, I think it's a really well done issue. I can't wait for issue 9 to see what happens. I want to find out more about Perpetua. I want to know more about Starman and what his role is in this new version of Starman, which again, as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, it's amazing to me the way that Tynan managed to keep so much of the original origin and just tweak it just enough here to make it say, you know, make that change that, yeah, so the beam of energy from the satellite was actually powered by the totality. I mean, that's additive, you know, just like I talked about recently with the life of Captain Marvel, and why I have no problem if they make that change to her origin, because it's additive. They're not taking away anything that happened. They're not saying something that happened didn't happen. They're just saying, hey, here's some more details that you didn't know, which I think is great. And plus, it's just great to see Starman return. You know, I remember buying the first issue of Starman off the rack. I think I read it for like the first 4 or 5 issues before I missed an issue, because, you know, I was buying it from the rack at the, you know, local corner store, and I probably missed one. And I was like, oh, I missed one. I can't read that one anymore. Just the way that I was back then. I couldn't skip an issue and then keep reading the story. But anyway, I was a fan of it back then, and it's great to see something classic return like that. So I think there are a few Will Patton Starman fans out there. Let me know if you are one. I'm very curious if anybody out there picked it up other than me. It didn't last really long, so I don't think the sales on it were particularly good. But it was Roger Stern, so anyway, I think it's great that Tynan brought him back. And again, I think this issue is just might be my favorite issue of this, of the title to date. Well, I take that back. Issue 1 was the strongest issue without question, but this is right there as runner up, really, really close. Probably the second best issue of the series so far. And again, it's interesting that I say that, because compared to issue 1, this one had a lot less action. But I don't know. I guess I'm a sucker for getting answers to mysteries and questions. And what's great about this is it gives answers, but it also raises more questions. So it's not like this issue ties everything up in a bow and we know everything that we need to know. And it's just a matter of seeing how events play out. There's still plenty of mysteries there to be solved. You know, like we learn the name of Perpetua here and that she's used to control these seven other forces that Luther's trying to discover. So, you know, we've gotten some answers, but yet it's opened up new doors and new possibilities for all these new mysteries and all these new questions that we want answers to. So, again, a really great story, very compelling read, and great job by the entire creative team. So, all right, thanks for joining, everybody. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Don't forget, next show I'll be at is New York Comic Con, coming up the 4th through the 7th of October. So first week in October, hope to see you all there. Starting to get interviews and other press event things lined up. So I will be there. I may not always be available, but I check my phone constantly when I'm at the show. So if you do want to meet up and take a picture and talk some comics and get a free Comic Source lanyard, just hit me up on Instagram or Twitter or even Facebook, and I'd be happy to meet up. So once again, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.